ebook publishers and marketing services company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, your favorite fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes, PRX, and right here locally on KSKQ 89.5 FM, Ashland, Oregon, art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $9.99 per month. And be sure to check out our new book rental program. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, we meet Grammy regular Deanna Bayrash, author Jeff Lane's Future Looks to Help His Past, and New York Times bestseller The Bullpen Gospels, in our Downpour.com special feature right after the news you want to know.
Separated.
Hey! Man, you're disrespecting me. Take them off.
You gotta keep them separated.
Hey, hey! Don't pay no mind. We're under 18 and won't be doing any time. Hey, hey! Come out and play!
Hello, I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
And I'm Cyrus Emerson. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Everyone loves the Beatles. We love the Beatles.
Of course. And
Charlie's best friend, Paul McCartney,
has
agreed to induct his former Beatles mate, Ringo Starr, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame next month. I mean, this is great.
I can't believe he's not in there yet.
Yeah, well.
Well, he's in there as part of the Beatles.
No, part of the Beatles. Yeah, the Beatles are in there already. Paul McCartney's in there already. John Lennon's in there already. George Harrison's in there already. Hmm. Ringo Starr now gets his due at the 30th annual induction ceremony at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in Cleveland, Ohio. So, You know, that's pretty awesome. You know, I mean, he finally gets his due. You know, he's always been kind of like the offshoot, you know, and I guess that's why he's in last. I mean, he wasn't the original drummer, right?
No, he was not.
Yeah, so it took him a little bit longer to get there.
You talk about a guy getting lucky.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean,
he should arrive in a yellow submarine.
Yeah.
You know, one of my
favorite. Kind of like Lady Gaga came in that like egg to the Grammys.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, he should be in a yellow submarine and have like an octopus's garden around him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, he should like make it like really festive and fun.
I bet he might do something like that. You know what? When you said he's not in the Hall of Fame already, you know, I'm like, I mean, he is a good drummer, and he has, you know, released a lot of stuff. Like, you know, actually, in the beginning when the Beatles broke up, in the first 5 years of their solo careers, he was the most successful.
Yo, you're right. I remember that.
Yeah, with the Don't Come Easy and the Back Off of Blue and Photograph and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like on a lot of their songs, like on, especially on the White Album and stuff like that, you know, they would drum their own tracks. He wouldn't even come into the studio.
Yeah.
You know, because they all played.
Yeah, they could all play all the
instruments.
Yeah. What? So the White Album is like beatbox? Oh, it just ruined the White Album for me.
Yeah.
There was four posters that came with that, with all four faces. So I would have hoped that all four of them played on that.
Well, they all did.
No, they all played on it, but there were songs where some of them, like, you know, didn't.
That's a dirty, rotten trick to play on a, like, on a Beatlehead.
Like that rule, why don't we do it in the road, you know?
That's
just Lennon and McCartney screwing around.
Good point.
So most of it is just Lennon and McCartney.
Well, I feel better now. Like, I got my money's worth.
But I'll tell you what, I heard a funny thing, man. It's like they asked Ringo, you know, about everybody says Sgt. Pepper's the best album the Beatles ever made, right? That was a turning point, this and that. And then all of them disagree.
Yeah.
And they asked Ringo what he thought about Sgt. Pepper's because it was such a milestone, right? In psychedelic era and everything. He goes, what do you remember about that album? And he goes, all I remember about that album was getting a lot of sleep because John, George, and Paul
did everything.
They said they wrote everything, they played everything, and there was really no need for me to even be there.
Oh, man.
They just told him to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream.
That's
You're
right.
Just
and you know what? Here's a little bit of trivia out of the Beatles, right? The three, John, Paul, and George, you know, all boyhood friends, grew up together. They were paid as a group. They split everything, you know, evenly. Ringo was a salaried employee paid by them.
Wow. No kidding.
Ooh.
Yeah. He got signed on like 10 minutes before they got worldwide famous.
Right.
Juicy. Oh, juicy
that's
info.
So funny. You know, like,
oh, no, he didn't.
Do you think do you think Paul McCartney would ever do a duet with Iggy Azalea?
You know what? I bet he would. I bet it would be good, too.
Well, I hope he doesn't ask her on Twitter because she's done with all that.
She's done with Twitter?
For now.
See, we were just talking about that.
Well, she had a little issue with a paparazzo. And she said, you know what? I'm turning this off. The rapper spent the last week off of Twitter and Instagram.
Isn't that against the law?
No.
Oh,
thank
damn.
God. She said, you know what? It's so nice not to be on social media. So I'm kind of going to continue that until maybe forever, she said in an interview.
Until maybe forever.
Until maybe forever. I don't know. I'm kind of over it, but maybe forever. I don't know. Which, you know, I completely understand. I went on vacation once where, like, you had to get the Wi-Fi password from the hotel. And you know what? My husband and I said, you know what? We're not going to do it. And we just went off, and it was the most relaxing vacation ever, just to not check, you know, Facebook and everything. And so I understand that. I mean, if you're really desperate for Iggy Azalea stuff, her management has been posting on her social media accounts. It's just not her. So bizarre. What a weird world we live in. So she's off social media, but she's keeping busy with her new music and her tour. And the tour was supposed to be this spring, and actually it got pushed back until September. And she said it was kind of interesting. She said she didn't want to wait until September, but because the arenas are booked so far in advance, it was kind of, that was when she could go. So she's like, it was kind of their next slot. That's what she says. So she said she's going to take advantage of the free time and record her second album. So there you go. She didn't she didn't anticipate having time to complete her next album, but now she has a few months to kind of think about it. And she's going to do that. That's kind of my dream. Like, oh, I have 6 months to just create art. Oh, fabulous.
Do we know anything about it? Anything? Has she leaked anything?
Well, first single's going to be out with Britney Spears.
What?
She met Britney at a Toys R Us. You know, they just live down the street from each other. So
that's cool.
She's like, oh, hey, Brit, let's do a song together.
Oh, my.
And buy some Nerf guns.
Just buy some Nerf guns for our kids and, like, write a song and stuff. Isn't that crazy? Oh, like, you just run into Britney Spears at Toys R Us.
Well, you know, just imagine for Get Behind Me Now, Sedator, we have a Twitter account and we have a lot of followers. And, you know, I put stuff up that's relevant when the new shows are up and, you know, what's the cool, you know, piece of art that's coming, you know, around. And
see, that's something I support.
Like that.
That's a great use for Twitter. I love when companies are on Twitter or really celebrities, their handlers, whatever. You're like, hey, I got a new album coming out, or hey, we've got new content. That's awesome.
Newsworthy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a good platform for that. And
I just don't think people will take me seriously if I say, find me on Twitter.
No, you'd be surprised.
You would be surprised.
You would be surprised.
It makes me want to blush, but
hey,
not
you,
quite.
You know what? Yeah. You'd be surprised how many people follow us on Twitter that are in the industry.
Yeah. Just
to see, just I'm to following see what, a Twitter? What going
I
don't know.
No, I'm serious.
It is popular.
We have a lot of, you know.
Oh, I know you are.
But the show has a lot of followers from the audiobook industry and narrators and actors and actresses and people and writers and, you know, and they'll send me tweets. Like Jeff Lane sent me a tweet saying, "Hey, dude, I heard your show is really cool. I would like to be on."
Yeah.
Well, that's hot. It's because we're hot. That's
all right.
Hot.
So what's your handle?
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There.
All right.
Right on.
Good to know. Twitter.com. Get Behind Me Now, Stay There.
Yeah.
Find us on Twitter.
That's right.
Hashtag.
You know what?
Hashtag potty mouth.
That's close.
Podcast.
Hashtag podcast. You know what? Here's the deal, man.
Right.
So if it's hashtag podcast, everybody that's looking for podcast will find that tweet. If it's hashtag Chrissy McIntyre, well, then everybody will find that tweet. And we know Chrissy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if you were to have, yeah, exactly. You know, something I wanted to ask you too, you know, you were talking about like in the industry and books and stuff like that. Did you read One Train Later, the autobiography from Andy Summers?
No, but I've heard so much about it, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, they made a documentary based on that, Can't Stand Losing You, Surviving the Police.
Oh.
Based on the, yeah, and this has been getting a lot of been getting a lot of buzz. You know, it's about the band's origins.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Do you know how they got the name The Police?
No, I don't. And I'm hoping you do.
This is the story that I heard, was that they wanted it, they called themselves The Police so that when people bought their albums, they were like, oh yeah, I got a Police record. You know, it's kind of like a...
Really?
Yeah.
30 years together, all set up for a joke. That's hilarious. That is really funny. I got a Police record.
Takes a certain kind. Takes an element of veracity.
Takes an adventurer.
Yeah.
Aging rocker. Kind
of. Well, Al Pacino is going to be in a new movie. It's called Danny Collins. And this is the first movie from this Bleecker Street, which is a New York-based film distributor. This movie, Danny Collins, it sounds really cool. It's written by Dan Fogelman, who wrote Crazy Stupid Love. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, I did. It was great.
It's a great movie. It's inspired by the real story of this English folk singer, Steve Tilston. And Steve Tilston, he was popular in early 70s. And he did an interview. The guy asked Tilston if he thought fame and fortune might corrupt his artistry. And Tilston said, yeah, actually, there's a good chance that he would probably sell out like so many people had before him.
At least he's honest, too.
Ah, he's honest. Well, it's the 70s. You know, there's no publicist then, you know?
Yeah.
You could say what you wanted and people
didn't tweet
everything.
Yeah, people didn't tweet
it. And so John Lennon and Yoko Ono read the interview and they wrote him a letter in 1971 encouraging him to value art over money. But the letter didn't reach the singer until a collector brought it to Tilston in 2005. And that's the basis of this movie that stars Al Pacino. And Al Pacino is this aging rocker who then gets this letter written by John Lennon and Yoko Ono. And that's how what they talk about in this movie. So I think that's such a cool concept, base a movie on. Because it actually happened, but obviously they've contracted it into this new plot. So it also stars Christopher Plummer, who I love, Annette Bening.
Who I love.
Great. Yeah. So it's really cool, and the company is really excited about this whole thing, and because the company Bleecker Street is they're trying to make movies with crowds 35 and older. You know, it can play to younger people, but they're really hoping that to entertain adult audiences, which is great because a lot of the movies now are like these sort of, you know, these big blockbuster hits, and a lot of people like them, but they're, you know, it's like all these crazy action heroes and comic books and stuff. And there's not a lot of movies out there for people like me. When I read this story, I was like, oh my God. And I, you know, the whole backstory, which is an actual letter.
I'm going to see this movie. Did you see the trailer?
Yeah. It looks amazing.
Isn't that
great? Totally going.
Oh, I totally got to see it. I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, you've got to see the trailer.
I totally
dude.
Will. You know, it's funny because I've read interviews with a number of people recently kind of lamenting that same fact that, you know, Hollywood is not making movies like they used to. You know, you couldn't get – you would be so hard to get Kramer versus Kramer made or Sophie's Choice or, you know, movies that did well. It's like if it's not going to make $100 million, Hollywood's not interested. And so it falls on the indie scene to make these movies that can do well, that can do, you know, a $2 million budget and make $20 million in profit. You know what I mean? That nobody's going to lose money on this stuff. It's just if it's not the home run, you know, we see – the same thing's happening in the video game industry. It's happening, I think, in a lot of other industries too, that it's like franchises or, you know, big superhero movies, like you say. And I am glad to see people like, because this is Andrew Karpin, right, who founded Focus Features, is the one doing this. And Focus put out a lot of really great movies in the 80s or in the 90s, you know, in the 2000s. So I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, you know, I saw the trailer for this and I read the story research on this. And it's here's the part, and just like you, Chrissy, is like this really happened. You know, this dude, you know, he actually John Lennon did write him a letter, and he wrote it in 1971.
Wow!
And he told him when the guy was on top of the world and he was really young, he's told him, dude, you know, stay true to your art. He goes, he even included his phone number. He says, here's my number. Give me a call. We'll talk about it. So in other words, like you know, one successful guy to another, like hey, you know what, like you know. We went through the Beatlemania thing, man. You know, don't sell out, man. Stay true to yourself. You know, here's my number. Give me a call. The guy never got it, right? Until he was like, you know, old, right? In the 2005, and then he in the trailer you'll see he looking at the letter and he goes, I wonder what would have happened if I had gotten this letter when I was supposed to.
Yeah, what, John Lennon might have lived or something. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, what would my life would have been like, right?
Right.
And then he's talking to Christopher Plummer, who plays like his manager. And he goes, don't break down over this. And he goes, dude, I'm already broken.
Wow.
And then Annette Bening, who's just a great actress, she plays a hotel clerk that he meets when he checks into this hotel in Jersey.
In New Jersey, baby.
Right. And then he takes a shine to her, but she's like, you know, she's not interested in him. You know, she's like, you know, whatever. But the whole movie, watch the trailer and you'll be, I guarantee you, you watch that trailer for Danny Collins and you'll be like, I am going to see that movie.
Just based on the description.
I saw the trailer and, you know, I'm like kind of blown away right now because I thought it was like an Adam Sandler comedy starring Al Pacino, but I guess, you know, Al Pacino is a very serious actor, and so I underestimated him. And yeah, it sounds like, you know, it's quite a story behind this. Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah, and Jennifer Gardner's in it.
Oh, yeah. And Bobby Cannavale, I saw, is in that too. Yeah. So you got a good cast going on there. I am so glad that this movie is being made, and I'm glad that there are more movies like this on the horizon. And, you know, I have nothing against – I love comic book movies. I love blockbusters. I love sequels. You know what I mean? But I think the world needs both. I think we need these independents, and I think we need sequels too. I want to talk about a sequel we brought up here a while back that has been confirmed. I don't know if you guys know about this, but to coincide with Pixar's 30th anniversary, they are releasing Finding Dory, the sequel to Finding Nemo.
All right.
It's official now. We had heard rumors about it in the past. We discussed it. And it's going to be all about Ellen DeGeneres' Dory character. And this time Albert Brooks is coming back as Marlin, you know, Nemo's dad, who helps her go find her parents. So, which they've got some great talent. This I love. So Diane Keaton is going to play Dory's mom. And her dad is going to be played by her dad. Her mom's name is Jenny, and her dad, Charlie, is going to be voiced by Eugene Levy, who a lot of people know from American Pie, from all the American Pie movies. He played Jim's dad. I know him, of course, from Armed and Dangerous and SCTV, Splash, exactly. I love Eugene Levy. I've always liked him, and so I'm really glad to see him getting this big budget work. You know, it's one of those things that kind of obviously took a while. I think 2003 was when Finding Nemo was released. And, you know, Andrew Stanton is going to return to direct. I think we know – Charlie, do you know Andrew?
I do. Yeah. Since day one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes, yeah, since the day he was born. So Andrew talked about in an interview with the Los Angeles Times, you know, he had kind of had a no sequels kind of standpoint. But he, you know, he told Disney, can you give us a timeline about when we release them? Because we'd like to release something we actually want to make, and we might not come up with it in the year that you want it. So he was very adamant, it sounds like, about making sure that it wasn't just about releasing a sequel. It was about making a story that they wanted to make. And I'm really glad for that because I hate seeing stuff rush just to, you know, get in on the hype or, you know. So I'm really looking forward to this. Another thing about it, and kind of unlikely really for an animated film, is Pixar is going to alter the ending of Finding Dory to take part in instilling social consciousness for animal welfare. The studio took cues from the documentary Blackfish, you know, which talked about the unfavorable way that orcas were treated in captivity at SeaWorld. An employee of Pixar spoke to the New York Times saying that the new ending will have to do with the fish and mammals from a marine park in the film to have the option to leave after being held captive. So Pixar getting a chance to kind of speak about something that's important to them and do it in an entertaining way. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be cool, man. I talked to Andrew, and you know, he not only is he going to direct it, but he writes his own movies as well too. And it was his idea that he wanted to include the Blackfish thing. He goes,
nice.
And you know, his movies have been so successful that he's at that position where now that you know you have to have a you know a certain amount of clout before you can say like you know I'm going to do it and we're going to do I'll do it but I'll do it this
way
because he did not want to do a sequel, you know.
Yeah, he'd been adamant about that for a while.
Well, you know what he this is definitely a sequel, right, to Finding Nemo. But he doesn't have a problem doing a series. You know, like there's Toy Story 5.
I was going to say, didn't he work on Toy Story? And
yeah, he wrote Toy Story.
Right, exactly.
You know, all of them, as a matter of fact. And Toy Story was his first movie.
Oh, that's right.
But he, yeah, as a matter of fact, he was a Pixar employee number 4.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, so, yeah, with him and Steve Jobs, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, like he was just telling me is that it's like, you know, he says sequels very rarely work. He goes, Toy Story works because, you know, Andy is a kid and he's growing up and it's a story and it just keeps going on so the kids can grow with it as they grow. You know, it's like the new one is, you know, Andy goes off to college and stuff like that. You know, so he can work like that. Just Finding Dory is just a sequel to the movie. And he said sequels very rarely work, you know. And he gave an example because he, you know, he does know Al Pacino, you know. And he said, like, yeah, Al Pacino was telling him that when they did Godfather 2, right, which turned out to be better than Godfather 1, you know, it was a great, but very rarely is the sequel better than the original. And, but he was saying, you know, he said that Pacino was telling him, he goes, you know, if it wasn't for Francis Ford Coppola, he goes, I never would have been in Godfather Part 2.
So, Charlie, are you Dory's dad? Is that, did he name him Charlie after you?
Well, you know, I really didn't want to get into that, you know. But let's just say I buy a lot of fish food.
Handed it.
But, you know, the thing for longevity, man, that just, you know, still speaks to all of us, you know. And Cyrus has got a story that I just got
to
hear.
Yeah, well, you know, Weird Al Yankovic has definitely found longevity in his career. And, you know, just the other day, he was singing Yoda with a 13-year-old autistic girl. And, you know, he goes all the way back into the 70s on Dr. Demento's radio show.
I remember that show, Dr. Demento, Dr. Demento.
Dr. Demento, and we did the interview.
Yeah, we did an interview with the guy who brought Dr. Demento out from Boston.
Right.
And he lives in Huntington Beach, California now, and he was on a radio station called KMET, and then that's where Dr. Demento got his start, where Weird Al got his start, too.
Yeah, the KMET. So, you know, Weird Al's been around forever, so how does he do it? You know, there are 5 lessons here, well, 5.5, actually, that we can learn about Weird Al. 1, leverage technology. 2, stay modern. 3, know your staples. 4, establish partnerships. 5, be yourself. And 5.5, don't be afraid to be a geek. I mean, let's face it, geek is the new cool.
We're not saying you're a geek, Jerry. What do you think about that?
You know, if I can make it out to his new concert tour, I will have seen Weird Al in 4 decades now. Because I saw him in the 80s, I saw him in the 90s several times, saw him in the 2000s multiple times, and then I have not gotten a chance this decade. I've been a little bit busy. But yeah, Weird Al... The keys to his longevity, Cyrus, you nailed it. Leverage technology. I follow Al on Twitter. I don't actually tweet, but I do follow some people because I like to hear what they have to say. He is constantly releasing little jokes and quips. I found a video he put on YouTube the other day where he was doing the magic floating orb. And he was just like, ooh, and he was holding it up like a magician. And then he turned sideways and it's a ladle stuck up his arm, up his sleeve. You know, but it looked like an orb. You know, it's just stuff like that. It was like 20 seconds long and it was hilarious. And he just does stuff like that, and he keeps himself current. You know, this album he just did, Mandatory Fun, which is the one he's going out on tour for, is probably going to be his last studio album because he recognizes where the industry's going. He released, you know, multiple video, 10 videos in 10 days off this album. He used, you know, he did his second, you know, he's always staying modern. That's number 2. That's how Weird Al does it, is he listens to current music. So it's not just, he's not just doing, you know, like a surgeon from the 1980s. He's taking songs like, you know, Happy from, what is it, Iggy Azalea, or is that Pharrell?
Pharrell,
right. And then Fancy from Iggy Azalea. Yeah. You know, so these are, you know, modern songs, and he's using them.
He's the anti-John Lennon.
There you go. Yeah. But he also sticks to his roots. When I've seen him do concerts multiple times, a lot, really. But he... not only does the current stuff off the new album, he still does older songs too. So
does he do Blurred Lines?
I haven't seen that tour yet because I haven't seen him this decade. So, you know, his song is called Word Crimes.
Oh, that's his parody. Okay, of Blurred Lines. I knew, you know, because one of the things I heard him say once is that when they asked, you know, why, you know, what's his criteria for picking out a song? He goes, first of all, it's got to be the beat.
Yeah, catchy.
Yeah, it's got to be the beat. You know, he goes, the words, I can mess with the words. You know, he goes, but it's the beat. And if it doesn't have that beat, like when one of the first big ones was Another One Bites the Dust by Queen.
Another One Rides the Bus.
Another One Rides the Bus.
Yep. Dun, 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 dun. Another one rides the bus. Exactly.
Another one on. Hey, yeah. I'm going to sit by you.
Another one rides the bus. Exactly. Well, you know, and that's another thing. The number four on Weird Al's list of staying, you know, staying popular is partnerships. Weird Al, by the laws of parody, he can parody any song he wants. He doesn't have to ask anybody's permission. And only once, really, has somebody said no. Coolio did not want him to do Amish Paradise, you know, parody of Gangsta's Paradise. But in the rest, most of the time, Al becomes friends and partners with the people to the point now that it's not – people are actually, like, looking forward to Weird Al parodying them. Yeah. I'll tell you this.
It's a badge of honor.
It is. Yeah. Kurt Cobain said, forget Rolling Stone, forget Saturday Night Live. When Weird Al parodied my song, that's when I knew I had made it. That was in an interview.
And actually, shouldn't Stevie Wonder have been included in on that whole Gangsta Paradise thing? Because it was Pastime Paradise that Gangsta Paradise was parodied off of to begin with.
Yeah, that was sampled, I guess. Yeah, it kind of goes back to our previous one. Yeah, there's a difference between sample and parody.
Yeah.
That's the difference, because he's parodying the whole song, so legally he can do it, because enough of it is changed. And the fifth thing was be yourself. Weird Al is a goofball. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And he's okay with that. And he's never tried to be anything else. He's never gone through that period where he's like, okay, now I want to be a serious artist.
I want to be a movie actor.
Or now I want to be, exactly. He's always been Weird Al.
He just wants to have my bologna.
Exactly. Now you have, you know, 40 years worth of people raised with that music. You know, when I started listening to Weird Al, nobody had heard of him. I was a complete pariah, outcast. And now Weird Al's cool. You know, people watch his videos. Look at
the video. Well, I think hipster, like the geek world is cool. I mean, you think about, like, do you ever see Chris Hardwick and his whole Nerdist thing?
They all grew up listening to Weird Al.
Yeah. I mean, that whole culture has really taken over. Mm-hmm. And so he's just, like, blended right in. I mean, yep. He just latched onto the musical godfather of that entire generation.
Yeah, you know, he is for you, but you know, but when he was playing, I remember when he first started playing on Dr. Demento, you know, and but there was a whole genre of people that did songs like that.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, and Tom Lear was one of them.
Poisoning Pigeons in the Park.
Yeah, and
Oedipus Rex.
And you know, a lot of people like that. But you know, the thing that spoke out to me about his longevity. It's something that we do here at Blackstone is, you know, and that's why Blackstone is such a young company, not young in years wise, but young with people, you know, and the young people around here is that, you know, we don't run away from technology. We embrace it.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about that in the past. Look at what happened to Kodak. You know, they had 86% of the film market, you know, and 20 years later, they're barely hanging on as a company at some point.
Right. Because and a lot of companies were like that because they're just like, I don't know if
this internet
thing is going to catch on. We're so successful at this. You know, I mean, and there's many, many, many examples, you know, like the newspapers with printing and stuff like that. You know what? You know, the smart people were like, you know what? I'm still going to be in the printing business, but now I'm going to work for Adobe because we're just going to do it in digital. You know, and it's the same thing.
Adapt.
You know,
Weird Al is the king of adapting to the new times.
Yeah. That's why he's still around. He's longevity.
That's it.
Yep. Yep.
Cheers.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro.
I'm Jerry Renfro, and I'm in the know. Let me tell you, $1 billion is a lot of money. The Billion Dollar Club in Hollywood is a very small club. Currently, there are 17 movies and 7 video games in that club. It's 24 properties that have netted over $1 billion. Now, of the 17 movies, only 2 of them are not franchise properties, at least not yet. One of them potentially has a sequel. Does everybody know what the highest grossing movie of all time is?
Titanic.
That's the second highest.
Ooh. Avatar.
Avatar, correct. Avatar and Titanic hold the number one and number two slots. Avatar netted $2.7 billion and Titanic netted $2.1 billion.
And interestingly enough, they were done by the same man.
James Cameron. That's a very interesting fact.
I'm so ready for Titanic, the sequel. Like where they the bring sequel. It up.
Jack's a zombie. And yeah. So
Titanic,
the
lifeboat.
Yeah, exactly.
Titanic, the lifeboat. 3 through 17 on the movie list are all parts of franchises. In the video games, there are 7 video games that have broken a billion. All but one are a franchise property, meaning they're a sequel or they have sequels. So in video games, one of the big trends right now is microtransactions. And that's where you sell somebody a game or give it to them. You make your money by selling them stuff in the game. So people will pay real money. I'd pay $20 to get $100,000 in-game cash. So I'm going to spend real money to get fake money that I then use to purchase things for my character online. So you can see there's a trend there. So if you want to make $1 billion in the movie or video game business, you should make a sequel to something.
Yeah.
And now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. Deanna Bayrash's new album, Miracle of Love, makes the Grammy red carpet. She talks about it with the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview. I want to get behind me now. Stay there. Today, we are just, like, really honored to have on Deanna Bayrash. And she is a singer, songwriter, composer. She comes to us from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to the show, Deanna.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing really good. You must be just adulated these days, you know, with the Grammy Award things coming up and all that stuff?
Yes, a little bit busy, yes. Because I'm still, you know, I'm doing that, the campaigning, and also still in the studio writing and doing videos and recording, writing. So, yes, very, very busy.
Have you been to the Grammys before?
Yes. I was last year, and it was really great, very exciting. Because people come from all over the world, and you meet very interesting people and lots of different artists, and there's so much music going on, after party. It was a really great experience, yes.
Yeah, this is very, very cool. So let's talk about your album, Miracle of Love.
Yes, what do you want to know?
I know that you wrote, a lot of the songs. Did you write all of them, or?
Yes, I wrote all the songs. All the lyrics are mine, and 70% of the album is my music. And then the other, whatever, 30-40, is me and my partner, Sunny Paxson, a fabulous jazz pianist composer. So, yes, we had fun writing it, and she's also the arranger and pretty much on all the songs on the album.
I gotta tell you, for all of our listeners out there, man, you know, your music is just so refreshing and so enjoyable. Live your life. You know, when I first saw that, you know, I just was like, man, this is so cool. I love the chorus, you know, and it's such a, you know, just a beautiful song, you know, and it really kind of, you know, gets you going.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, the video is fun. I had a lot of fun making it, and I think it's a very inspiring song that a lot of people can relate to and be empowered by. So, yeah, it takes me always a minute to write the lyrics. I mean, music comes faster, but the lyrics takes me a minute.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, and you have a beautiful voice. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you so much.
You know, as a matter of fact, let's hear a little bit of that song right now for all of our listeners out there.
Live your life, take a chance, make a difference. Take your time.
you're recording these albums, you know, and it's got to be, you know, just a, you know, a labor of love, as they say, you know, to be, you know, in this business and, you know, to see what you love doing, you know, come to fruition. And people are just like, are you know, appreciating, you know, not only your music, you know, but, you know, you're just like all of a sudden, you know, like, hey, this could be it, you know?
Well, we'll see. I think I'm reaching more and more people and hear about it. You know, it's hard when you're an independent artist and you're not represented by a record company. It's really hard to reach masses, but I think more and more people are getting to hear it, and I'm very excited. Because, yes, I think it's a special project, and it's a special writing that comes from the heart and the soul. And it took about 2.5 years to record the album and complete it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very special to me, and I hope a lot of people will be listening and inspired by it and moved by it, because that's the whole idea.
That's what happened, you know, for me. Because, you know, you just have that special quality, you know, it's very refreshing and very comforting. You know, find yourself, you know, walking around your house singing your song, you know.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Just wait till you hear my second project that's in the works right now. I just shot a new video, which is going to be on my second album, but it's going to be revolutionary.
Oh.
Yes, yes. I'm very, very excited. It's something new and different, and but that will appeal to everybody.
So where do you come up with your ideas for all this?
It's hard to say, you know. Sometimes I just wake up in the middle of the night and something comes to me. Sometimes I can be driving. Sometimes I'm traveling. Sometimes I'm at a concert and I just start humming something of my own. Situations, people, nature, anything. But also sometimes when I just sit at the piano and just start playing around, usually something good comes out. It takes time, but it does.
So you draw your inspirations from the world around you.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I'm talking to you, and I can see the sunset, and that's inspiring.
So, you know, you come from Europe, right?
Right. I was born in Eastern Europe. It used to be a part of Soviet Union, but now it's an independent country called Moldova.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's close to Romania and Ukraine, and it's very small and poor these days, but I was born there. Special for me.
Yeah. Is it anywhere close to Bulgaria?
It's borders with Romania. It's same language, just different dialects. It used to be part of Romania.
Oh, okay.
And Russians took it away, yes. But yeah, Bulgaria probably a few hours.
In Europe, everything's so close by train, you know, it's just...
That is true. You can reach by train, even if you go overnight, and yeah.
We did some interviews with some people in Bulgaria, Jonathan Taylor, who's a singer, and then the author, John Dodds, and they are in love with that region, you know, and they say, you know, everywhere around there is just beautiful and it's great. The winters are a little tough.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been there yet, but it's definitely on my list because I love traveling so much. It's very inspiring for me to travel, to meet new people, and see new situations, new places. Everything is unpredictable. No routine. I love that. No routine.
Right. You just, you know, get up and whatever happens is whatever happens.
Yeah, you kind of plan your day. You're on vacation, so.
Well, you know, I would imagine, you know, making a music video would be like a pretty cool thing to do.
It is. It is. You know, it takes a while to write a script, of course, and I go back and forth with the director, and first of all, we have a meeting, we sit down, we talk about ideas, then he sends me the script, and then we go a little bit back and forth and deciding if we love everything, or we want to omit something or change something. And then, you know, hiring of all the crew and the pre-production, it's great. And, of course, the day of the shoot, it sometimes takes a whole day or 2 days, but it's fabulous. It just, the adrenaline is pumping like crazy.
I bet.
It's really great. I mean, I just shot the new one 2 weeks ago, so it's still kind of in my veins.
Yeah. So it's all fresh.
Yeah. I like that. It's a whole crew working together and making this few-minute video that's going to be magical and special, and a lot of people get to see and get to share it with them. It's really great. That conveys a message within a few minutes. I like that.
Yeah.
How we ever were without videos, I don't know.
I know, and you know what's something that's, Deanna, that is amazing when you think about it? It's like YouTube, for example, and Facebook, too. Both of them are only 10 years old, you know? So now where can people find all your music and your videos, and where can they buy your albums?
Well, I have my site, which is my name, DeannaBerish.com. Then I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, iTunes. Then you can hear the whole album and see if you like it on SoundCloud and Reverb Nation. I mean,
oh, you're just all over.
Yes, it's everywhere. Yeah.
I see you're on Pandora too. So, oh my gosh.
I'm on Pandora. I'm very happy to get on Pandora. It's exciting. Yes. I love it. I'm on Smooth Jazz as well. Smooth Jazz and Smooth Lounge, and I'm campaigning, and it's going good. More and more people getting to get to know my music, which is fabulous.
Well, you know, that is just, you know, a great thing, and we're so glad that we came by you. You know, we recommend everybody go out there and, you know, pick up a copy of your CDs. You can get it on CD Baby if you want to order one from there, if it's a physical CD, or you can go to Downloads to iTunes, anywhere else.
right. Yeah, you can go on my site and everything is there. But yeah, whatever people are used to and is easy. And yeah, check out my lyrics. I have songs like obviously Live Your Life and Save This World and After the Rain. So very profound lyrics that can appeal to a lot of people and inspire. So I hope they will take a minute and listen and maybe read the lyrics, which is great.
Well, I'm sure they will, you know, and we are just really, you know, very honored to have you on. Hey, well, enjoy the sunset there in the City of Lights.
Yes. And thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Deanna. Thank you.
To learn more about Deanna Bayrash, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Wasting time with all the chat room yakkers. 9 to 5 chilling at Hewlett Packard. Working at a desk with a dumb little placard. Yeah, paying the bills with my mad programming skills. Defragging my hard drive for thrills. I got me 100 gigabytes of RAM. I never feed trolls and I don't read spam. Installed a 2-1 line in my house. Always at my PC, double clicking on my Miz house. Upgrade my system at least twice a day. I'm strictly plug and play. I ain't afraid of Y2K. I'm down with Bill Gates. I call him money for short.
Yeah. Author Jeff Lane, best known for his novel This Paper World, talks about his patio book One Way, the movie adaptation, in this interview with president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we're really honored to have on the author Jeff Lane. And many of you know him from all of his books, and he, you know, has got so many out there, The One Way and the Paper World, which has got quite a bit of press, and it's done very, very well. And I noticed that there is a book, too, in the saga, and it's called This Burning World. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me, Charlie.
Hey, you know, it's our pleasure. It really is, you know? Yeah, you know, we're broadcast around the world, so tell everybody a little bit about this One Way.
So, yeah, One Way is my time travel with heart thriller. It's a story of a man who goes to work, and he works second shift at a call center, so he's driving home late at night. He stops for gas, and incredibly, his wife is unexplainably at this gas station in the middle of the night, and he's asking her, you know, is she okay? What's she doing there? And as he gets closer to her, he realizes she looks different. She looks older. She looks sick. And she tells him that she's been a widow for over 4 years, and she's come back in time to stop his murder that night.
Oh, wow.
And the adventure begins.
Hey, you know what? And that is, if that doesn't get you going, nothing will. I tell you, the time travel and the whole concept, Yeah, that sounds like it'd be one, a really good movie, and two, I'm sure it's a wonderful book. I saw the trailers for The Paper World. Kind of tripped me out, you know?
Yeah, that one's a fun one. That one's part of my Champion saga, and you mentioned there in the opening, it starts with This Paper World, and then the sequel is This Burning World. That's been a real fun thing. And as you said, there is a trailer online. The production company that's doing the movies wanted to do a trailer, almost as like sort of a pilot. They were going to use it for some fundraising and for some other things, but they also said, hey, just use it as a literary trailer, get people interested in the book and the audiobook. And that was fun. It was a really interesting cast. It was all filmed over in England and London, so I never really got a chance to meet any of the cast face-to-face, but the lead actor who plays the main character is Jim Hunt, and the actor is Omri Rose. He and I chatted for quite a while about the character. He wanted to get into the character's head and know what was coming up for the character and what was the character's motivations. And they did quite a bit of sort of combat fight training leading up to the actual filming. So they were in like ballet studios and fight studios for weeks for the filming of the trailer. And it turned out great. I mean, it looks great. And that was the first time I've ever seen the characters that I dreamed up in my head come to life on the screen. So that was a fun moment to doing that trailer.
I watched a few interviews with you, and you had mentioned that you had been on PodioBooks.com. Yeah, it's a great site for people out there, you know, for people recording their own audiobooks, right?
Yeah, I did. It's sort of the whole journey that This Paper World took, and I started getting into listening to podcasts, and I was listening to, you know, podcasts about TV shows or different fandoms that were out there. And I was starting to listen to some literary podcasts, and I wanted to get into podcasting, but I thought, well, I could jump in and podcast about a TV show or do a pop culture thing. And then it sort of hit me, hey, I've got this old book. I should try to podcast that. So I did that on my own. I created my own feed, and then later got hooked up with Evo Terra and the PodioBooks.com group. And that was just another sort of step. My own podcast feed, but then Podio Books creates a separate feed for just the books, and they do such a great job of making sure that, you know, they've got great content out there, and they really support the authors. Fun moment getting involved with that group.
If you've ever heard of a podcast, we have like 5-6 people, you know, some from New York and some from the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, we all get together. And when we were doing these stories in the news and views, we did one on the guy like yourself who put his book out by himself. He made like $1.6 million in 1 year off Smashwords, man. He put his book out by himself. He did everything by himself, and he just put it out a chapter at a time.
That's what you want to do. And I think every generation of author has probably had different barriers to getting in, and a new technology will come out that will make things easier. You know, Charles Dickens probably had his challenges to getting up and running and breaking through and, you know, standing out from his contemporaries. And Stephen King probably had his challenges. And now the internet world, like you said, I think, you know, it gives everybody a voice, and you get a lot of people who are able to put out content. So the challenge for this generation of authors is to break through that and get your head just above the waterline where everybody else is. But it also, I think the more content out there, I'm a big believer in, you know, a rising tide floats all boats, that, you know, the fact that you've got so much different types of content that, you know, it's harder to get that one sort of mega franchise. You know, the Harry Potters of the world are going to be rare, but the fact that we can have, you know, a Hunger Games and a Twilight and Maze Runner and the Vampire Academy, those may be fandoms that aren't ever going to be the big next fandom, although they're huge, and certainly wouldn't mind that level of success, but you've got enough of them out there that can all appeal to whatever pocket audiences, and that's enough. I mean, that's great. It creates a lot of diversity in the content world, and gives a lot of authors a great chance to share their stuff.
You know, the book's got to be good, and your books are good, so that's why, if you don't write a good book, you know, Jeff, people don't come to you and say, I want to make a movie out of your book.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that's always been sort of my hope, is that, you know, if I'm making something that people like, then regardless of how many other, you know, books are out there, that, you know, people will find it and like it, and they'll tell their friends, and it'll start picking up momentum. if you're putting stuff out there that's mediocre and it's just like everybody else's, well, then no, it's not going to get noticed. So that's really my goal, is to make the best, most engaging stories and try to do something that, you know, people like, and is in the sort of genre and sort of storytelling that people like and will embrace, but at the same time might give them something new that they haven't heard before.
From reading, you know, your books, I know that you're doing that, and I can see that other people are recognizing that as well. Well, you know, they say when you're writing, you write what you know, you know?
Well, you do. I've thought about time travel my whole life. Ever since I was a kid, I was watching Doctor Who on PBS and, you know, watching Marty McFly and his DeLorean go back in time.
Yeah.
Some of it does come from either daydreams or dreams. I've actually had dreams where story ideas in dreams that I have a journal that I keep in my closet, and I also have a Word document that I keep on my computer. And you do have to, sometimes it's just snatches or ideas or phrases, but you do grab those. Most of the ones that I've had to date that have actually made it down on paper have been sort of waking dreams, just sort of daydreams. And my process is pretty slow from the time that I get an idea to the time I can actually get it out on paper. It's my brain, I marinate the ideas for quite a while. The time gap between finishing this paper world and starting on the sequel, this burning world, was about 11 years. But I actually have the whole first trilogy, the initial trilogy, mapped out in my head, and I have pretty much since the first book was finished. But those ideas keep circling your head and morphing and changing. And then, so there's sort of one stage of the initial idea. Then there's that time that I sort of let it soak in its own juices in my brain, and it morphs during that process. And then by the time I actually go to put it on paper,
right,
it will change again to serve the story or sort of make it all work. It's a fun process, and it all sort of is one long, continuous dreaming cycle, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's, you know, it's good when you go, like, you know, when you're taking your book one way, you know, from a book format to a movie, I think it's very beneficial when you have other people, other sets of eyes going in there going, you know, this is fine this way, or, you know what, let's do it this way. And then you get to see it from a different perspective, too.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a neat discovery part of it, because I know how I see the book in my head, and I know how I meant to write it, but seeing how someone else interprets it tells you, you know, either you were successful in conveying that mental image over, or, wow, you conveyed something a lot different to someone else, and you like that too.
Yeah, with the book you've written, it's going to be a fantastic movie. And, you know, we wish you all the success in the world. And we want to let everybody know that they can pick up all your books on Amazon.com. And I'm sure they're available all around where fine books are sold. And boy, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. I got to tell you.
Oh, thank you very much. I love talking to you. This is fun. And just in the past few days, I've been binge listening to your show, and I love it. You guys are doing a great job there.
Oh, thanks.
To learn more about Jeff Lane, visit our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Bullpen Gospels, a New York Times bestseller. From the humble heights of a Class A pitcher's mound to the deflating lows of sleeping on his gun-toting grandmother's air mattress, veteran reliever Dirk Hayhurst steps out of the bullpen to deliver the best pitch of his career, a raw and unflinching account of his life in the minor leagues. Whether training tarantulas to protect his room from thieving employees in a backwater hotel or absorbing the gentle mockery of some not-quite-starstruck school children, Hayhurst reveals a side of baseball and life rarely seen on television. Upon its release, The Bullpen Gospels became a New York Times bestseller, and with comparisons to Jim Bouton's Ball 4, The Bullpen Gospels is slated to be a classic of the genre.
I was dominating this team, a complete force of nature, punishing them from all angles, like throwing to blindfolded children. A grand symphony should have been playing in the background for my display of pitching mastery. At one point, I could actually see myself from the outside, really digging myself, like an out-of-body moment of baseball zen. I adjusted my hat and took the sign from the catcher. I didn't like it, so I shook. I didn't like the next one either. Or the next one. Or the... Come on, man, I don't even throw a three. Why do you keep putting three fingers down? I shouted. I'm sorry. The other guys use three as their curveball, he whimpered back. He didn't come out for a mound visit, yelling at me from across the expanse that separated us. Great. Thanks. Just tell the guy what I'm throwing, why don't you? Besides, no one uses three for a curveball. Three is always a slider, I said. The batter stood awkwardly, looking back and forth between the two of us, confused. Sorry. You don't have to throw it. We could throw your... Use your fingers, not your mouth, okay? Stupid rookie. He squatted back down and adjusted his mask. I reloaded on the mound. I'm a winner. I'm a champion. I will do this. There is no try, only do or do not do. Wait, how did Yoda get in here? I'll bet he has a filthy changeup. A Jedi mind trick or something. What am I doing? Focus, Hayhurst. You're a tiger. I set my feet again slowly. Then, for the coolness effect, I lifted my head to lock on with the catcher's fingers. Fastball. Just what I wanted. Why waste good breaking stuff on these losers when all I needed was a good old numero uno to sit them down? I nodded, then started my windup. Left foot back, hands up overhead, rock, pivot, knee up, and then a ferocious uncoiling down the slope to where I let loose. In slow motion, you'd see the batter's hands go back, taking the bat to its proper position. You'd see my front foot land in the precise location I practiced repeatedly in front of a mirror. You'd see my torso rotate, level and clean, with no balance issues. You'd see the batter's foot go up as he began to channel his weight for max power. You'd see my elbow give way to my hand as it snaps a screaming fastball into motion. It would all look so flawless, so magical, so poetic. It would leave you scratching your head, wondering how in the hell I could look that good and still drill a poor high school kid in the ribs at around 90 miles per hour. You know that dull thud sound? The one a blunt object makes when a person gets hit real good? It made that sound. He went down hard, convulsing between screams of pain as he writhed on the floor.
One of the best baseball books ever written, says Keith Olbermann. And Bob Costas says, hilarious, poignant, a really enjoyable read. Dirk Hayhurst, drafted from Kent State University in 2003 as a senior sign, has pitched professionally for 7 seasons on 7 minor league teams, as well as for 2 big league teams, the San Diego Padres and the Toronto Blue Jays. Since 2007, he has blogged about baseball for Baseball America. Born and raised in Canton, Ohio, he now lives in Hudson, Ohio, with his wife, Bonnie. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you'd like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Holly Lorian Adams.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.